This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Like many entrepreneurs, you saw an opportunity. The light bulb went off in your head when you heard about the regulation, and then you took action. You started speaking to key stakeholders. Very important step, because a lot of entrepreneurs will see an opportunity and get building straight away. And there's a big disconnect, because what happens is they spend time building their product and there is no product market fit. They built something the market doesn't need, or perhaps not solving the core problem that exists. And you went in and you spoke directly to the customers. So let's walk through the customer validation process. It's going to be something of interest to many startups, especially in prop tech. How easy was it for you to get in touch with the key stakeholders, in this case, municipalities, consultants, other property developers? And walk us through how you went from having the idea to actually checking this is the right thing to do. How many people did you talk to? And at what point was there enough research for you to just say, yes, I've done my customer validation, now I'm going to commit to building this out?
So that's a very, very valid point. And I agree, like, from being in a startup environment for several years now, this is where a lot of startups fail in the very beginning, right? So my core focus from the beginning was, I'm not going to build something that nobody needs. And you have to make sure that there are people who need a solution to this problem that you might think is a problem, but does anybody else think it's a problem, right? So we talked to at least 50 people who are somehow related to the top tier property developers within the whole region of Scandinavia, like CEOs, VPs, you know, general managers. And so basically majority of them said that this is something that they really need. And considering the new regulation that nobody really knows how to comply with, because there's no one industry, like, it's never existed before, they were really excited to hear about this. And after we talked to this consultancy that is basically the number one point of contact for the majority of property developers within Scandinavia, and they said, this is what we've needed for years, and especially now because of the regulation, then, you know, it was the, like, moment of aha moment, you know, like, okay, this is something, you know, we're onto something. So if somebody like that tells you that they would pay for a solution like that before you've even developed it, then that's, you know, that's something. That's something to hold on to, and that's probably something to develop, especially if you see that there is not much competition. Because, in this case, it's a new market. It's a completely new solution. That's the validation you want, and that's the validation you need. When the industry speaks for you, like, they say, yes, this is what we need. Otherwise, I would have never moved forward with this idea, because why would I spend my time, my money, and my effort towards building something that nobody wants to use?
When it came to deciding what part of the problem you want to solve, it seems to me what you're saying is that there wasn't much infrastructure in place, that if this law were to be implemented, it wouldn't be practical because people wouldn't know where to get the data. So wasn't that quite a intimidating problem to overcome, the fact that the data might not be easy to access? How did you solve that problem? Is the data easy to access even?
It depends country by country, and not only country by country, but municipality to municipality, because the data is so fragmented, at least in Europe. it can differ from country to country, and not only country to country, but municipality to municipality within the same country. So some of the data is basically scanned PDFs, and half of that is handwritten.
Oh my God.
So again, why is there no industry, right? So it's obviously a pain. It is a pain point to get access to all of this data that not entirely is even online, let alone like in a digital format. But thanks to machine learning, there are a few things you can do. So there are a few recognition algorithms that can read even crazy PDFs like that and transfer that data into a normal digital format that we can then store and work with. So again, it depends country by country. Some countries are kind of ahead in terms of a digitalized version of all of these reports on buildings, and some of them are not that ahead. But yeah, there's our technology that we have today. It does enable you to build algorithms, to build machine learning programs that can recognize the data in whatever form they come. So yeah.
That sounds as intimidating as you can get. If half the data is stored in PDFs, the other half is stored in handwritten formats.
Some of them are like API, normal databases, but that's rare.
Okay. There is some convention here, or at least some usage of technology in 2020. and from the perspective of deciding what to do, a lot of founders wouldn't even understand the layers of problems involved because of the fact that data isn't ready there. It's easy to go build a startup when there's all this available data you can go build on. Here you had to go hunt, and it must be quite painful because you're basically in the mode of creating a data platform where you've got to get integrated into different data sources. For you to truly have integrity and to deliver the most value, you've got to turn over every brick to make sure that every municipality is storing data the appropriate way. So how does that work? Are you having to do some thought leadership and training to make sure that the legacy systems can be upgraded so that they can integrate with Material Mapper?
Yeah, well, it was quite a journey and still is, not gonna lie. But from my previous background, first of all, I have worked in a due diligence company that did exactly that. So from my previous background, working with unstructured data that is stored in various different formats in the governmental databases, some of it is literally handwritten, like I said, some of it is digitalized, some of it's not. I already knew that it is possible to track down this data however they're stored and to structure it in a way that it is possible to store it, you know, in a kind of the same format in order to build a good UI UX in order to sell it forward. So yeah, I already had this experience, so I was not like shocked or, I don't know, like clueless how to go about this. So I already knew that it's possible to do, and I came with this background and I didn't get scared. I was like, okay, it is what it is. This is the bureaucratic thing that happened. This is what we need to overcome. Let's find a way to overcome it. If there's a problem, there's a solution. And there's definitely a solution in this. So that's how we started, and that's what we found.
It also looks like what you found is your purpose, really. You it literally looks like you're the best person in the world to do this. And also what every entrepreneur probably should strive for, right? To solve a problem that's meaningful, that can change the world and make a difference. Also, a problem and the solution so powerful that it can create an entire ecosystem other startups, other small companies, every stakeholder that touches this can benefit in some way. And also that the set of experiences you've had previously in what you've done translates so well to being able to tackle this problem. And that sounds like a very powerful purpose and a very powerful sense of serendipity, or you could say, you know, it was meant to be that you're here to solve this problem because of the way things have unfolded.
Thank you, Zane. That's really, I'm glad to hear that. That's a big compliment from you, first of all. So thank you. And yeah, I do think that all of my experiences that I've had in my previous life have kind of led me to this point, because I've always been very much interested into preserving our planet into, you know, having the most eco-friendly solutions in any industry in order to have a beautiful world to live in, right? Because we only have one. I'm not planning to move to Mars with Elon. We'll see what happens, but hopefully not. So my core purpose is to do something, at least a tiny little bit, to make this world a better place for all of us to live in. And one of the main reasons why it's being damaged right now is the waste, right? So I kind of, I guess, found my little piece in the pie. I found the little thing that I know how I can change for the better. And that is exactly what I'm going to focus towards.
So with such a mission-driven company, I've always believed that when you work on a problem that's very big, you're more likely to succeed than when you work on a problem that's perhaps practical and small, because everyone is competing for mediocrity. Everyone is trying to build solutions for what seems easy. It's the hard things that are intimidating. Have you found going after such a large problem that in practice, has it been easier to attract attention, attract employees, attract interest from customers, or is it still a struggle for you?
Honestly, I have to say that I've been very lucky. Funnily enough, this Corona time has been the best time possible for the company, because that is exactly when we started. We're very young, and I believe that we've achieved quite a bit in just a few months of working. So we started in March 2020. By the beginning of April, we somehow won the world's first global hackathon with 15,000 participants. We won in the environment track and we were top three globally. So that kind of gave me the push and the extra motivation to keep going, because obviously it hasn't been easy, to say the least. As the first mover, it's always tough. But I feel lucky to have achieved that. And after this hackathon, we got a lot of PR attention. We were on Forbes US, completely by accident, in my opinion, but so it was great. And then, you know, I have VCs approaching me. I have media approaching me, events and all that. So that's kind of like we've already somehow created quite a bit of buzz around the issue as on its own and around the company. So I feel very fortunate to have that. And that makes me one more time believe that this is the right time and the right place to do what we're doing, and that we're onto something.
And I think that's something that can inspire many would-be entrepreneurs. When you work on a big problem like that, you will succeed because it's connected to your sense of purpose. And when you have a sense of purpose, you can move mountains. And you need that drive, and that drive comes from seeing the impact you can make.